This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Big business begins to buy more big stuff.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It's the Morning Open. An optimistic Commerce Department report on large manufactured items. That's coming up. But first, where's Wall Street? Markets are down right now. The S&P off about 0.25%. The NASDAQ more than that. About 0.4%. And the Dow lower now by 23 points, 10,865. European shares off a bit, too. Fitch Ratings downgraded Portugal's debt, and investors responded today. In Asia, markets closed mostly higher. Orders for so-called durable goods increased in February about 0.5%. Analysts were looking for a bigger rise. Richard DeKayser is president of Woodley Park Research with us live from Washington this morning. Morning, Richard.
Good morning.
So durable goods are these expensive items that are going to be used for a few years. And I want to break this up a little bit, define what we're talking about. Is this about consumers buying washing machines or businesses buying, I don't know, computer servers or aircraft?
Well, it's mostly about businesses. There are categories that we had information on which showed that, for example, spending on things like appliances were actually down in the month of February, but business spending on capital equipment, machinery and the like, was up substantially and is now up over 20% from this time last year. So it really depicts a business sector which continues to lead the economic recovery.
All right, so this is about confidence then? Businesses buying these big-ticket items that cost a lot of money?
Absolutely. You don't buy these big-ticket items, which usually require financing, unless you're sure the business is going to be there. During 2008 and 2009, they were fleeing these kind of purchases in droves, but increasingly this year we've seen a revival, and it does speak to the sense that business is beginning to poke their head out of the bunker.
How does this translate to jobs, Richard?
Well, eventually orders have to be made good. So we have production and then the shipments that get these orders filled as goods find their way back to business. That requires increased production, ultimately increased employment, and ultimately increased income. So orders are a forward-looking indicator that have to be met with a number of things that altogether add up to more economic activity.
Got to have people working those big-ticket items, right?
That's right.
All right. Richard DeKayser joining us this morning from Washington. Mortgage applications were down for a second straight week, 4.2%. That's from the Mortgage Bankers Association. That out just this morning. Bank of America may throw a lifeline to some homeowners across the country whose mortgages are underwater. Today, the company will announce a plan to forgive the amount of money people owe beyond what their home is actually worth. Marketplace's Brett Neely is with us live in our Washington studio with that. Good morning, Brett.
Morning, Steve.
How's this plan going to work?
Well, starting in May, Bank of America will cut what borrowers owe on some underwater mortgages by up to 30%. In return, they'll have to stay current on their mortgage payments for about 5 years.
And how big a deal is this?
It depends. The government has wanted lenders to reduce what borrowers owe for a while so people will stop walking away from their houses. Chris Mayer is a real estate expert at Columbia University, and he's seen lenders make enough of these announcements that he's waiting to see the details.
If they're saying they're going to do it all the time, then this is going to be a really big program. If they're saying they'll consider doing it, the question, as it has always been, isn't so much announcing a big program, it's how often do you do it?
All right. So, Brett, if the banks are still walking this tightrope, what about the government's attempts to keep people in their homes? How are they working?
Well, the government's own efforts haven't done so well. Unlike Bank of America, the government is just trying to reduce the amount of interest borrowers pay. But just yesterday, the Inspector General of the government's TARP program said the administration's loan modification program will help fewer than 2 million homeowners.
Marketplace's Brett Neely reporting from Washington. Brett, thanks.
Thank you.
Listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Wednesday, March 24th, 2010, at marketplace.org. President Obama travels to Iowa tomorrow to sell the benefits of health care reform. Preventive care is one major focus of the new law. An example, by next year, more than 200,000 fast food and chain restaurants will have to disclose calorie counts on their menus. Marketplace's John Dimsdale has more.
The idea is that by letting restaurant customers compare calories, they'll order healthier food. Margot Wooten at the Center for Science in the Public Interest says right now, eating out involves a lot of guesswork.
People look at the menu and think the tuna sandwich is better than the roast beef, when in fact it has 50% more calories.
After more than a dozen states and cities passed their own restaurant labeling laws, the industry came around to supporting a national standard. Sue Hensley is with the National Restaurant Association.
There was this growing patchwork of legislation and regulation. Most of those provisions did not include as much information as this bill will now require.
It also calls for a national strategy for illness prevention, as well as the creation of a national preventive care council. To encourage healthier babies, the law requires employers to give working mothers time and a place to pump breast milk for their babies. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
We hear a lot of rhetoric coming out of Washington claiming companies doing business overseas costs us a lot of jobs at home. But a study out today from Dartmouth College and the Business Roundtable suggests it may be time to rethink that idea. Marketplace's Elisa Roth reports.
The researchers use data from the Commerce Department to see what happens here in the U.S. when companies expand their reach overseas. Matt Slaughter is a professor at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth. He wrote the study. He says the analysis turns the common wisdom upside down.
On average, when companies are hiring more people in foreign markets, when they're undertaking more capital investment in their foreign affiliates, they tend to do more hiring, more capital investment back in the United States as well.
For example, when a company creates jobs overseas, it may also hire more support staff at home. And money that's made in foreign markets can be reinvested back in the U.S. Slaughter says the Commerce Department doesn't say what jobs multinationals create in the U.S., but one thing is clear.
They tend to then be able to pay workers good wages.
An average of 19% higher than domestic companies, in fact. Slaughter says we should think about all this as the economic recovery continues. He says we need to create jobs that are capital and export intensive, precisely the kinds of jobs that come out of multinational firms. I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Angry business owners say they've had enough of being Yelped. Yelp.com has become an influential site for customer reviews of everything from restaurants to doctors. But more and more small businesses are joining a lawsuit that basically accuses Yelp of a shakedown. Some claim the site emphasizes negative reviews unless businesses agree to advertise. Marketplace senior business correspondent Bob Moon has more.
At first, California businessman Barry Hyde says he liked the idea behind Yelp.com.
I think the model has a lot of merit, which is why I told customers to go there.
Hyde's car repair shop was getting mostly positive online reviews, but then he says he got a telephone sales pitch from Yelp suggesting that for a price he could move his favorite reviews to the top of the list. When he declined, he claimed some glowing reviews that he was keeping track of began to vanish.
I have approximately 13 to 15 five-star reviews that aren't showing up on my listing.
Yelp has an explanation for that in a video on its website.
Giving people what they want is a complicated process. If you use Yelp a lot, you have to know that not every real honest-to-goodness review makes it onto a business page.
Yelp CEO Jeremy Stoppelman has blamed what he termed a weird automated system that filters out certain reviews based on criteria he didn't detail. Yelp's recently posted video explains the algorithm this way.
It takes the reviews that are the most trustworthy and from the most established sources and displays them on the business page. This keeps less trustworthy reviews out.
It's not clear what makes a review trustworthy, but Yelp says there's a line between the reviews and its sales team, quotes like the separation of church and state. Hyde, who owns M&M Auto Works near San Jose, wonders why he was told, he says, that some missing reviews could show up again for a price.
I think that if you're putting a website up that's reflecting people's opinions of businesses, that all those opinions should be allowed to be heard and they shouldn't be leveraged to advertise with them to make sure they stay there.
Hyde says that's unethical, and he's been talking to one of the lawyers seeking class action status in the legal challenge against Yelp. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Wall Street's been getting a lot of the blame for the country's economic woes. People in the financial industry don't exactly have the best reputation at the moment. Now imagine being a banker and running for the U.S. Senate. That is the case in Illinois. Tony Arnold from Chicago Public Radio reports.
Democrat Alexi Janulius has been the Illinois state treasurer for the last 4 years, but before that, he was the chief loan officer for his family's community bank called Broadway Bank. Janulius has said the FDIC may have to take control of Broadway, and the bank's downfall has mostly been because of bad loans. And that's been the main issue in Janulius' campaign to fill Barack Obama's old U.S. Senate seat.
Alexi Janulius engaged in the same kind of reckless lending that brought our U.S. economy to its knees.
Congressman Mark Kirk is Janulius' Republican opponent. A Janulius campaign spokeswoman says it was Mark Kirk's votes in Congress that helped create the economic mess. And Janulius has his defenders, like Illinois senior senator, Democrat Dick Durbin.
There are good bankers, you know. There are people who really try to do a good job, and there are some who are not. We ought to have the good sense to know the difference.
Janulius has a slight edge over Mark Kirk in the most recent poll. Alan Gittleson says that doesn't mean voters are fully on board. Gittleson teaches political science at Loyola University.
Roughly 56% of the voters in Illinois are at least somewhat reluctant to support him because of his history of being a banker.
As for potential voters like Chicago and Jim Hannon, he says despite the banker baggage, some financial experience might actually help a political campaign.
They might have a good idea what, you know, how to manage the money then, you know, hopefully.
Hannon says he's still undecided, but there's plenty of campaigning left. Political scientist Alan Gittleson says the Republican, Mark Kirk, has barely started hammering at Janulius for his banking background. He says it's likely Kirk's saving it for closer to the November election. In Chicago, I'm Tony Arnold for Marketplace.
And finally, a store in London says what's good for matrimony is also good for the big breakup. Know somebody getting a divorce? Buy him something from Debenhams, one of Britain's largest department stores. Their new divorce registry features items for the newly single. Pots and pans, toasters, towels. Shouldn't be too hard to figure out what your heartbroken friend needs. Just find out what they didn't get in the settlement. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. Check us out online at marketplace.org. Share your thoughts and grab the podcast there. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media. The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.